Today on Richard Ellis Talks.
Obedience is huge, and sometimes it requires suffering and enduring and going through something. And because the joy that was set before him, he endured the cross, despising the shame. He saw beyond the cross that obedience to the Father would pay off, not just for him, but for us, that it was worth it.
Welcome to Richard Ellis Talks with Richard Ellis. Richard's going to take the next few minutes to share some great words of hope and insight for you. And in today's broken world, that is something everyone is desperate to hear. Richard shares unapologetically the truth of the Bible in a way that's clear, relational, and uplifting. So thank you for taking this time to listen. We know it will bless you. And when you have a moment, you might want to check out our website so we can stay connected with you, richardellis.com. But right now, let's go ahead and get things off and running with today's talk. Here's Richard Ellis.
The title of today's message is The World Cup. Some of you know I grew up overseas in Brazil and England, grew up playing soccer, and about every 4 years, there's this big thing called the World Cup that really Americans have no idea basically what's going on or what it means, or that there's 1.5 billion people out there screaming and going crazy. And where I grew up in Brazil, I'm sure today, since Brazil won another World Cup, it's kind of nuts down there. But as big as the World Cup is, there really is only one World Cup, and it took place a couple thousand years ago. Believe it or not, the World Cup is in the Bible. And one of the places we're going to look today is in the book of Mark, chapter 14. So if you've got a Bible, turn there. If you don't know where it is, there's a table of contents in the front of your Bible usually. And we're going to look at a passage here and give you a glimpse of this World Cup in the Bible and how this stuff applies not only back then, but now in our own lives where we live today. The context here, what's going on is it's before Jesus dies, basically. It's hours before he dies. And there's a dinner party. It's a Passover meal that they take part in together, and you can read about that in a number of the Gospels here. We're going to kind of focus today in Mark chapter 14, and you see that they found a place to have this Last Supper that he would have with the 12, including Judas. Judas left that dinner and went to betray him, but was there at that meal. And Mark chapter 14, let's pick up in verse 17 and go through some of this. In the evening, he came with the 12. Now, as they sat and ate, Jesus said, "Assuredly, I say to you, one of you who eats with me will betray me." And they began to be sorrowful and to say to him one by one, "Is it I?" And another said, "Is it I?" And don't you think it's interesting? If you were going to betray Jesus, you would kind of know that. It's not like something that sneaks up on you, you think. But isn't it amazing how we can live for Christ for so long, every day of every week, of every month, maybe for a long time, and then out of nowhere, just like that, betraying? Ditching. Get in a situation. I had a situation a couple of days ago, or it might have even been yesterday. I live in an apartment building. We moved in there. A bunch of people that we can reach out to around us. And there's a girl that parks next to my car, two cars down. And I said hello to her a few months ago and got her name. That's about all the interaction we had. And I walked out there yesterday, and there's a moving truck, and her whole family showed up to help her move out. And I walked up as the door went down, and they were about to drive off. And I spoke her name. I said, "Natalie, are you moving?" She said, "Yeah, the place is too small. I'm going somewhere else." And I said, "Man, y'all have a great time. Glad you're with your family." And I turned and walked away, and that boy said, "Go back." And I kept walking. Got up on my steps going into my house because I had to go and she had to go. And I was like, this is going to be too awkward, all her family. I don't want to embarrass her and myself, you know. Just let me go. I got up the top of those steps, and I couldn't take it anymore. He said, "You know what, just go back and tell her there's a church, there's a place, there's somewhere she can come, that she's welcome." So I walked back down the steps. She was standing right there in front of the truck by herself. I said, "Hey, Natalie," and I pulled out something out of my pocket, a card, and I said, "There's a church that meets downtown." I said, "You can come just like that, moving clothes and all, and you'd be welcome." And she looked back at me and said this. She says, "You know, I've been thinking about finding a church and getting back in church. Thank you." And I was within inches of missing that. Now, how many times do I walk away? You say, "Well, you'll probably never walk away. You're a minister of the gospel. You obey God all the time." Every time I'm prompted, I have the opportunity, and the Holy Spirit inside of me says, "Now, tell that person." And I say, "You know what, Jesus? I really don't have time. You take care of him through somebody else. I have betrayed him. I know what to say. I know what to do. I can give a reason for the hope that's within me." And a simple invitation is all it would have taken. And it's all it took. And she responded. You'd be amazed. Very rarely does anybody not respond. And here Jesus is saying to these disciples, somebody's going to betray me tonight. And one by one, they say, "Is it I?" Another said, "Is it I?" He answered and said to them, It is one of the 12 who dips with me in the dish. The Son of Man indeed goes just as it is written of him. I'm going to die. It's written that I'm going to die. But woe to that man by whom the Son of Man is betrayed. It would have been good for that man if he had never been born. And let me tell you something. That is not a nice thing to say to somebody. When Jesus said that, that tells you something about the mess that Judas was in. It would have been better if he had never been born. That's how big a deal what Judas did to Jesus. And this is what they did that night. Verse 22, and as they were eating, Jesus took bread, he blessed it and broke it and gave it to them and said, take, eat, this is my body. Then he took the cup, and when he had given thanks, he gave it to them, and they all drank from it. One cup, passed it around, and he said to them, this is my blood of the new covenant, which is shed for many. Now this word covenant, let me read you some definition of this word. It's a disposition, an arrangement of any sort, which one wishes to be valid, the last disposition which one makes of his earthly possessions after his death, a testament or will. Another way to look at it is a compact, a covenant, a testament. An example is God's covenant with Noah. He says, this is my blood of the new covenant. He makes a blood covenant, a blood deal. And I'm not recommending this, and it's a dangerous thing, honestly, if you look at it and some experience I've had with this. People say, well, I'm going to cut my hand, you cut your hand, and we'll shake on it and make a blood covenant. Don't be doing that. Don't be mixing blood. Let me tell you something. Blood is something powerful. And when Jesus held up that cup and basically said, this is the deal. This is what's going to happen to me. This is how it affects you. And we could go on for months. And Scripture points to this weekend when all this happened and points back to it. An amazing thing happened. This is my body. And if you look at the Passover, this meal they're eating, usually there was a lamb that was killed a day or so before. That lamb was prepared. They ate the lamb, consumed it completely. What was left, you know, threw away. And it was elaborate ceremony and meal that they took. But at this meal, they had everything. But Jesus said, it's not just the lamb. He's the lamb. And he took bread, something they would always have, the wine, the cup, something they would always have. And he said, these are symbolic. Eat this bread. And when you eat bread, remember me. When you do this together, when you drink this cup, remember me. I made a deal with you. Not only with us, but he made a deal with God. I will take their place. I'll stand in the gap. I'll die in their place. So he said to them, this is my blood of the new covenant, which is shed for many. Assuredly, I say to you, I will no longer drink of the fruit of the vine until the day when I drink it new in the kingdom of God. And when they had sung a hymn, they went out to the Mount of Olives. Down in verse 32, there's some other things that happened. Let's jump down there just for the sake of time. Then they came to a place which was called Gethsemane. And he said to his disciples, they'd been here before, they'd done this before. It was a place that Jesus loved to go pray. Said to his disciples, sit here while I pray. And he took Peter, James, and John with him, and he began to be troubled and deeply distressed. There's different ways this is told by different writers. But here he tells, basically, Judas is already gone, so there's 11 of them. 8 of them stay in one place. He takes 3 of them on with him a little farther, and then he goes a little farther. He wants Peter, James, and John with him, though, closer by. And then I want you to look at a couple of words here. And he began to be troubled and deeply distressed. Now, let me tell you what this word troubled is. It's ekthembeo, which whether you care less about that, but listen to the definition of this word. To throw into terror or amazement. To alarm thoroughly, to terrify, to be struck with amazement, to be thoroughly amazed, astounded, to be struck with terror. Now let me read it again. And began to be troubled. This is not Jesus out there, and Father, and I have a rough night coming ahead, and bless my mom and my dad. Something hits Jesus out of almost nowhere. It overwhelms him. It comes completely over him from the inside out. And the reality, not that he didn't know it was coming, but it hits him. He began to be troubled. And then the next word, and deeply distressed. And this word deeply distressed means this. To be troubled, great distress or anguish, depressed almost. It's that intense. This is the strongest of the 3 Greek words used in the Bible for depression. Now you're going to say, well, was Jesus depressed? No. He was intensely, though, overcome and overwhelmed by what was about to happen. It hit him. The load of what this deal he had made and what had to happen hit him. Verse 34, then he said to them, my soul is exceedingly sorrowful, even to death. Stay here and watch. And this word exceedingly sorrowful. very sad, exceedingly sorrowful, overcome with sorrow so much as to cause one's death. It is such intense sorrow that it literally can kill you. Verse 34, then he said to them, my soul is exceedingly sorrowful, even to death. I could die right here praying. It's so overwhelming. Stay here and watch. Stay with me. Watch out for me for a minute. Give me a minute to work through this and to talk to the Father through this. And then verse 35, he went a little farther and he fell on the ground and he prayed that if it were possible, the hour might pass from him. And he said, Abba, Father. The word Abba here, you know, I try this, guys, and it's so hard sometimes, but I want you to see there is emotion, there is passion, there is feeling in this book. You have the God of the universe and a man on the ground with his daddy, and he says this word, which is the word they would have used for daddy, and he's out there by himself in this garden going, Daddy, Father, there's got to be a way for this hour to pass for me. It's killing me. I'm going to die right here. It's overwhelming me. It's too much. Not that it was too much, but the humanity, the deity of Christ, all God, all man, all God, somehow that tension where he could do it, but yet he's been through some of these things we've been through, yet without sin, the book says. Look what he says, Abba, Daddy, Father, all things are possible for you. I know who you are. I've seen what you've done through me. I've lived a perfect life. I know I'm going to die the perfect sacrifice. I speak and you back me up and you heal people. I speak, the dead are raised. Amazing, miraculous things have happened. I know that, Father, all things are possible for you. Take this cup away from me. Nevertheless, not what I will, but what you will. Now, guys, let me tell you something about that verse. That sooner or later, you're going to end up in that verse. Now, I've got a cup here in my hand. I want to symbolically ask you a question. If you had a cup in your hand right now, and some of you got them out there maybe, and you looked at your cup, what is in your cup? And one of the definitions for this word cup, it's obviously a cup, a drinking vessel, but metaphorically, it's one's lot or experience, whether joyous or adverse, divine appointments, whether favorable or unfavorable, or likened to a cup which God presents one to drink, so of prosperity and adversity. What is in your cup today? What's your challenge? What is it that's your prosperity? Maybe something great's going on. That's what's in your cup. But maybe all hell's breaking loose. Maybe you've lost your job. Maybe you've lost your health. Maybe you're losing your family. Maybe it just can't get any worse, and it's so overwhelming, it's killing you. And that's your cup. And you either have to drink from that cup and take it and go through it, or God comes along and says, you know what, I'll take it away. And you say, God, if it's tough, see, if it's great, you go, thank you, God, for what's in my cup today. And you take it in, and it's great. But if what's in your cup is not so hot and not so great, then what you do is start praying what Jesus prayed. Father, Daddy, I know that it's possible for you to take this away. And if there is any way, you know, if your mama's sick, and you say, God, I know you can do anything. You're the same God in the Bible. You can heal my mama. And if there's a way for this cup to pass away for me or for her, so be it. But not my will, but your will be done. That's where we get caught. That's where we lose it. Because we keep screaming at God, saying, God, you can't do this to me. You can't keep this going on in my life. And we take the cup and want to pour it out and get rid of it. Say, I'm not dealing with this. You know what? It doesn't go away. You stand before Him somewhere by yourself, or you lay before Him prostrate somewhere and you say, Father, I don't know why you put this in my cup. I don't know why you're letting this happen to me. Maybe I brought it on myself. Maybe just allowed it for something. But I got nowhere else to go. I trust you. And this is my cup. And I know you can get rid of it. But if you don't, I'm telling you, not my will, but your will be done. Now, what do you got in your cup? And what are you going to do about it? And what are you going to do with it? And are you willing to keep that cup and to drink of that cup and let God see you through it, no matter what it is? Health, money, family, marriage, singleness, purity, whatever it may be, are you willing to drink that cup? Now, let me tell you something. Why is this such a huge deal? Because if Jesus had found a way out of that garden, I'd be screwed. Because he was willing to go to the garden, and in that intense sorrow, in that intense emotion, that overwhelmingness of that moment, he was willing in all that pain, but he said, you know what, God, if I can get out of this, if there's a way around this, if there's a way for this cup to pass for me, great, but not my will, your will be done. And thank God that he submitted to the Father's will, or none of us would be here. Obedience is huge, and sometimes it requires suffering and enduring and going through something. And because of the joy that was set before him, he endured the cross, despising the shame. He saw beyond the cross that obedience to the Father would pay off not just for him, but for us, that it was worth it. Now, some of you guys are trying to freeze what's in your cup. You're trying to pour it out. You're trying to postpone it. You're trying to do everything under the sun. It is what it is. And if you pray and he's not removing it, you've got to go through it. But you're not going to make it without him. All things are possible without him, and including in that is getting you through this situation. All right, let's keep reading. He said, "Abba, Father, all things are possible for you. Take this cup away from me. Nevertheless, not what I will, but what you will." Then he came and found them sleeping and said to Peter, "Simon, are you sleeping? Could you not watch 1 hour? Watch and pray, lest you enter into temptation. The spirit indeed is willing, but the flesh is weak." I know your heart, Simon, but I know your body. Again, he went away and prayed. Same words. He comes back to kind of get some encouragement from his friends. He's out there by himself, but yet his friends, he goes back to his friend, and they're laying out there snoring, asleep. "Peter, what are you doing? Why are you sleeping? I needed you out here." So he goes back by himself again and spoke the same words. "Abba, Father," obviously repeating this thing again. Spoke the same words, and when he returned, he found them asleep again, for their eyes were heavy, and they did not know what to answer him. Then he came the third time and said to them, "Are you still sleeping and resting? It is enough. The hour has come. Behold, the Son of Man is being betrayed into the hands of sinners. Rise, let us be going. See, my betrayer is at hand." If you go back over to Matthew chapter 20, let me take you over there for just a minute. Two disciples' mom coming trying to figure out if her boys could sit on either side of Jesus in heaven. I mean, it's just weird stuff in the Bible. Matthew 20, verse 20. "Then the mother of Zebedee's sons came to him with her sons, kneeling down and asking something from him, begging him, and said to her, 'What do you wish?' And she said to him, 'Grant that these two sons of mine may sit, one on your right hand and one on the left, in your kingdom.' But Jesus answered and said, 'You do not know what you ask. Are you able to drink the cup that I am about to drink and be baptized with the baptism that I am baptized with?' They said to him," the boys said, "'We are able.' So he said to them, 'You will indeed drink my cup and be baptized with the baptism that I am baptized with, but to sit on my right hand and on my left is not mine to give, but it is for those for whom it is prepared by my Father.'" They said, "Yeah, we can drink it." And he said, "Yeah, you know what? And you will." And if you look at the disciples' lives, and I go over this, I know repeatedly, you can turn on your TV, suffering does not raise any money. TV evangelists get on there and tell you, if you follow Christ, you're going to suffer. You don't send much cash that way. If they tell you you're going to get rich, you send money. There is suffering in the Christian life. And this cup they had to drink from, Jesus drank from it. He said, "You're going to drink from it. It's coming." Suffering, challenge, problems are coming your way. It's not optional. It's part of the package. Go over to 2 Corinthians chapter 12. One more passage where a similar situation happens a few years later with a guy named Paul. And we'll read this together. 2 Corinthians 12, and let's start with verse 7. Paul had spent so much time with God, had so much stuff revealed to him and through him to other people by God. I mean, he could have gotten the biggest head on the planet because God was using him intensely. And it says here, "And lest I should be exalted above measure by the abundance of the revelations, a thorn in the flesh was given to me." And we don't have a clue exactly what this is, and it's a good thing we don't really know what it is absolutely. "Some thorn in the flesh was given to me, a messenger of Satan," it says, "to buffet me, lest I be exalted above measure. Concerning this thing, I pleaded with the Lord 3 times that it might depart from me." Paul goes to him and says, "God, remove this thing in my life, this thorn in my flesh." And it was something in his flesh, probably in his body. Flesh means body. So it's something that wouldn't change. And he'd go to God and say, "Father, you can do this. Get this out." He had seen people healed. He had healed people. You know, "Get this thing out of my life. You have the power to do this." So 3 times he asked God to remove this. He pleaded with the Lord 3 times that it might depart from him. "And he said to me," this is Jesus' answer to him, "My grace is sufficient for you, for my strength is made perfect in weakness." And when Paul heard that, then he said, "Well, therefore, most gladly, I will rather boast in my infirmities that the power of Christ may rest upon me." If that's what happens, if it's about getting more grace through these challenges, leave the challenges, I'll go for the grace, because I want the power of God to rest on me more than I want this stuff to be removed. Sometimes God allows this stuff to stick in your life and stay in your life because He can work in your life. I know couples, individuals right now that financially, they're getting so stretched they can't take it anymore. And it is amazing when you talk to them and listen to them that their daily prayer life about daily bread, literally, God, what are you going to do today? It's one meal to the next, or it's one paycheck to the next, or no paycheck to the next. And how are we going to pay the lights, and what are we going to keep on or turn off, and God take care of us? And it's literally, give us this day our daily bread. If today you talk to those people and someone wrote them a check for $1 million, they put it in the bank and never had another care in the world, I'm not saying they turn away from God, but it's just not the same. And sometimes people who, under distressful situations and circumstances, whether it's financial or emotional, health-wise, whatever it is, it keeps you with the lines open talking to God. You just don't walk away and say, I'll see you next week, next month. It's amazing how many people show up at church when all hell breaks loose and their lives fall apart. And then they drift off when things get better. And you'd wonder why God allows stuff, tough stuff to happen to us. Because sometimes it's the only way to get our attention. And even in Paul's life, 3 times, remove it. No, my grace is sufficient for you. He says, and I'd rather boast in my infirmities that the power of Christ may rest upon me. Verse 10, therefore I take pleasure in infirmities, in reproaches, in needs, in persecutions, in distresses for Christ's sake. For when I am weak, then I am strong. Now, Jesus was at His weakest moment, if there was such a thing, potentially in the garden. It wasn't at dinner, explaining the deal, drinking the cup. I believe it was tough on the cross, but I think something clearly happened in that garden, or the reality of it, with the digesting of it, the just processing of it, He and the Father. There was no way around that cross. There was no other way to get it done. There was nobody else. It was Him, and He came face to face with that. And if you watch it unfold from then on, it's not all this anguish. There's physical pain. There's the trial. There's a mock trial. There's all these things going on. But Jesus sets His face toward that cross and just goes and endures that pain, knowing it's going to be okay. I'm going to die. I'm going to suffer. My Father is going to turn His back on me. And at one point on the cross, if you recall, I think it's over in the next chapter of Mark 15, about verse 34, He cries out, my God, why have you forsaken me? He had never had God turn His back on Him. And all of a sudden, God turns away because He couldn't look on sin because all that sin had got dumped on Jesus. And I can't even begin to tell you what hit Jesus. And I think in the garden, it started to hit Him. All of our sin was about to get dumped on Him. All the atrocities, everything got dumped on Jesus. Why? So that I could be made clean, so that I could be forgiven, so that you could have the assurance of eternal and abundant life just like that, as a gift. So simple, but so tough for Him.
Before Richard comes back to wrap things up for us today, I'd like to share a couple important things with you. Let me encourage you to take a minute and check out our website, richardellis.com. You'll find today's talk right there in the talks page, along with all of Richard's audio and video messages. You can even forward them to a friend so they can hear them too. You'll also find the prayer wall to add your prayer requests, a link so you can connect with us, the contribute page for you to be able to give to this ministry, all of our social media links, and much more. So check it out, richardellis.com. And Richard's back now to wrap up today's talk.
There's bound to be somebody listening today in this room, on a radio, on the internet, somewhere, and you can't take it anymore. And you know what? It's not the cup you face alone. You don't even have Christ to strengthen you. When you're weak, you're not strong because He doesn't even exist in your life. I had a conversation last night in this building with a woman who basically said that God is a myth and went on and on about different things. And that I respect that's where she is. That's what she believes. You know what? I can't imagine living with this God that I know thinking He's a myth. He is real. He is alive. He loves me. He gave His Son for me. It doesn't get any better than this. And somebody listening today needs to transfer their trust from you getting you through life and into eternity and through eternity, if you even believe it exists, to saying, God, I believe Jesus lived. He died, was buried, raised from the dead, died on that cross, shed His blood to pay for me and my sin, exchanged my nothing for His everything. Come live in me and through me and change me. And I know whatever cup you give me, I can face it. Beyond that group, there are believers who you're doing everything in the world to face something that is not going away. And you're going to have to get along with Jesus somewhere, beyond the friend, beyond the family, by yourself, you and Daddy, you and Abba Father, and say, Father, I know what you can do, but it doesn't look like it's going away. And if there is a way, I'm asking for you to take this cup away from me. But my ultimate prayer is, not my will, but your will be done. I'll accept whatever you say, and I will obey, no matter what it costs. I can't think of any better way to live than that. Is it going to be painful? Yep, either way, it's going to be painful sometimes. But it is better to suffer for doing the right thing than the wrong thing. Whatever your cup, take it, drink it, face it, and let God see you through it to the other side.
You've been listening to Richard Ellis Talks. We really appreciate that you spent this time with us, but we want to keep the conversation going with you. So give us a call anytime at 855-6-RICHARD. That's 855-6-RICHARD. Or through our website, richardellis.com, by sending an email to us so we can stay connected with you. We love bringing you the program every day, but it means even more to us when you let us know how the program has helped you. Call us at 855-6-RICHARD or through the website, richardellis.com. Your story needs to be heard, and we're listening, caring, and encouraged. 855-6-RICHARD or richardellis.com. Finally, if you enjoy the program, let us know by your generous support to join us on our mission to reach the planet. We can't do it alone and need your help on this mission. RichardEllis.com. So till next time, have a great day, and thank you for listening to Richard Ellis Talks.